If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
There's No Waiting, episode number 438, Opie's Birdhouse. Two Chairs No Waiting is brought to you each week by the folks over at WeaversDepartmentStore.com. Drop by over at Weavers and check out some of the great items they have there. They got t-shirts, all kinds of stuff. One of the things I want to point out this week is the Mayberry Police Department Ringer t-shirt. It's one of those really soft t-shirts. It just feels good wearing it. Folks have been enjoying wearing their Mayberry Police Department t-shirts. Head over to Weaver's Department Store and check it out. Two Chairs No Waiting is also brought to you by donations from listeners just like you. The executive producer of episode number 438 is Paul Pyle. Paul, thank you. I'm sorry. The producer may fire me because I can't read the name. Who am I? I am Alan Newsom, or the number. For the episode. I'm Alan Newsom, your host for Two Chairs No Waiting. I hope you're going to enjoy this. I believe you will. We've got a good show planned for you. We're going to be talking about something I ran across when I was at the Mayberry, or the Andy Griffith Museum. I keep wanting to call it the Mayberry Museum because most of the stuff in the museum is Mayberry related. But one of the items that was there that you guys will see if you go to the museum is a birdhouse. Now, if you go in the museum, there's an area that looks like Floyd's Barbershop. And if you go in there and start looking around, you're going to see over in the corner, there's a letter there at the bottom. And then above it, there is a birdhouse that you will see that's called Opie's Birdhouse. And this was really neat to me because as I was there at the museum, I realized I have this birdhouse. And what it says under the caption, it says, Opie's Birdhouse, a letter by Harvey Bullock. Now, the letter is obviously sitting there with the birdhouse. And it gives some information about the birdhouse. It says, this is one of several Opie's Birdhouses built, signed, and donated by Opie the Birdman writer Harvey Bullock, who we've had episodes about. He did it for Opie the Birdman Ruffle, a fundraiser for victims of 1992's Hurricane Andrew. The accompanying letter, which is sitting right below the birdhouse there in the museum, from the beloved writer, tells a story about how the house plans, about the house plans and the construction. That's right. So the reason I thought this was really cool and neat is because I have a Opie's Birdhouse myself. Now the one that you see in the pictures, or if you'll see there in the museum, has a green roof, and mine has more of I guess you'd call it like brick red. That's what I would call it anyway. I'm sure somebody from Sherwin-Williams, like my wife, would be able to tell you a more exact color, but I call it brick red. And so I thought it would be interesting to read the letter since we've done some stuff with Harvey recently. I've done our episodes recently with Harvey Bullock, the interviews. I wanted to give you the information that is on that letter because it relates to my birdhouse as well as the one there in the museum. So let me take you and give you a chance to read this because it is it's pretty neat to see a letter from Harvey Bullock. It's called Opie's Birdhouse. So I think you're going to enjoy this. All right. So I'm going to read this for you. Opie probably decided to build a birdhouse right after he opened his white bird cage and let Winkin, Blinkin, and Nod fly free into the trees. He attended those three songbirds almost since they were hatched and wanted them to have a nice place to live. Nobody in Mayberry much used the word recycle back then, but they were all pretty handy at making do with what came to hand. Opie was just as resourceful. He sought out pieces from the cedar fence board busted up by Mr. Hudson's goat, you know, the one that ate the dynamite. These were just right for the sides and the bottom of his birdhouse. And he got some thin boards for the roof from old boxes Mr. Crowley had over at the market. Opie next asked Aunt B if he could have the tiniest piece from the end of her broom handle, you know, for a chimney. She finally agreed, but struck a hard bargain. Opie had to promise to sweep the porch every day after school. Opie finally agreed after she sweetened the deal by tossing in two clothespins he wanted for a little fence post in front of the birdhouse and 2 feet of clotheslines he'd need to hang the house from the tree. To fasten the clotheslines to the house, Opie was lucky to find that Floyd the barber had some cup hooks that he had bought a few years back at the hardware store to hang up some coffee mugs. They turned out to be too small to make the mug handles hang on there, and they were only good for teacups. So Floyd was pretty miffed at this and intended one day to write a complaint letter to the Better Business Bureau. For the roosting peg, Barney gave him a pencil stub from a sheriff's office. Barney never liked to write when the short pencils, when they got short. He didn't think it looked good for people to see a peace officer with an important paperwork use a stubby pencil. Barney liked the heft of at least 6 inches of good old Ticonderoga number 2 or Empire Company Trusty. One of the little perks of being a lawman. The part Opie liked the most building the birdhouse was when he figured out the perfect little fence board he needed to go between the clothespin post was a stick from an ice cream bar. He even talked to Andy 3 times into buying him a test bar so he could be sure that the stick was just right. So that's how Opie built this birdhouse. Andy helped him some, but Opie did most of the sawing and finishing on it. Just 3 Band-Aids were required. He hopes you enjoy it, Harvey Bullock. So, guys, if you're looking at the pictures, if you see the pictures there on the Andy Griffith Museum website, or I'll post a picture of the birdhouse in our Two Chairs No Waiting Facebook page. You go to facebook.com/two chairs, but you can see the birdhouse. It's got the popsicle stick between 2 ends of a clothespin right there in front. That's where the bird could come in and stand there. And then it would hop up on the pencil and then go through the hole to go into the house. It's got the cord hanging there for the 2 feet of clothesline to hang it up to the pole, hang it up on the tree or something. It's got and you can see the broomstick handle right there. And not only that, but if you start looking, and I'm not sure I can show people on the video or not, or even not, but on the front, there's actually a thing that tells you it's, I can't read it. I think it's 331 and a half or 333 and a half Maple Road is what it says on the front. That's the address. And the back is signed. It says Opie's Birdhouse, Harvey Bullock. So that is in the Andy Griffith Museum, and it's a sight to behold. And he sold them or made them back in 1992 for that hurricane relief. That's the kind of guy Harvey was. Amazing, amazing person. And it's actually 332 and a half Maple Road is what it actually says. You can see it there. I finally can read it. I blew it up in the picture so I could read it better. So, folks, anyway, I thought you'd enjoy that. Now, we did those episodes recently with Harvey Bullock, and I know you guys have enjoyed those because I've gotten a lot of feedback from you. If you have not heard those, you need to head over and check them out because they were some just great information. It's episodes number 432 through 435 of Two Chairs, No Waiting. You want to go and check those out. So while we're on that subject, I want to read this letter that I got. This is from a fellow named Joe Gritton. He is, he's been on the podcast in the past, and he said, Alan, thank you for sharing the videos of Harvey Bullock, the screenwriter extraordinaire. As you may remember, because Joe, if you don't remember, has written a couple of episodes of Two Chairs, No Waiting that involved Floyd and a old-time radio. Episode number 384 would be the one I would recommend to go and check out, 384. It's called Mayberry After Midday. Mayberry After Midday. That's the last one. And he's done more than that, but he's a writer. So here's what he said. As you may remember, as a writer more than an actor, if I were a tribute artist, it would be for Harvey Bullock and those like him. A tribute artist to the writers, you might say. I remember in my early days on the Digest when Harvey Bullock would periodically write in and answer your questions. I remember that too. It was amazing. It felt like being with royalty reading his words. I understand why Professor Brower's voice cracked, and he was so in awe of Harvey. As a writer himself, he so understood Harvey's talents and the way that perhaps maybe not everyone did. Let me describe it this way. I believe there are three primary parts to every memorable character that has ever been created. One, there's the casting and production. The likes of Sheldon Leonard, Danny Thomas, Andy Griffith, and Ruth Birch, they chose the person and gave the writer and the actor a vision of what they wanted and assisted in with consulting and costuming and props and makeup as needed. Two was the writing. This creates the situation, you know, where they live, what they do, who they associate with, how and what they talk about. This includes their buzzwords, their habits, their gifts, and their flaws. The third part, of course, is the actor themselves. Their talent must bring to life the creative vision and concept of the other two. They must put voice and action to the character. In very few words that production and writing have envisioned and hoped for. When those three parts come together, a memorable character is born. Let me give you a few examples. What would Barney have been without his one bullet in his pocket? Without the nip it in the bud? Without boy giraffes are selfish? Without a tendency to get gassed or singing off key? What if he never had such an ego that he thought he was a master of disguise or master of judo or various businesses? And he thought he was a suave ladies' man. He would have been a lot more like Ralph Furley, right? Good physical comedy, but not lovable and memorable. What if Aunt B made everything perfectly and never failed at pickles and fishing and at acting? Even tied. She had the right balance of skills and lovable flaws, and an every woman family member who everyone wanted to be with or to be. What if Andy never failed as a father? What if he never learned lessons from Opie, or never played tricks on Barney, or never saved Barney's ego, feelings, or reputation? What if he was just a lawman and not a peacemaker and a tireless public servant? Those are the finer points to a character that writers like Harvey instilled in characters. Floyd's meanderings about Calvin Coolidge and a dingo dog is indigenous to Australia. Those gave him personality. his situations of being joined by, a bookie barber, a manicurist, made being a barber come to life. His Lonely Hearts Club fibs, brought out such a human feeling that we would want to run away and curse in the mirror for what he had done. Yes, Harvey and the other writers were the mostly unsung heroes that gave the Andy Griffith Show life, made it endure for 8 years and beyond, and made us to believe that Mayberry was a real town. And of course, gave us the characters that we happily will never forget. We salute you, Harvey. Joe Gritton, the untrained voice. Joe, thank you for taking time to write that in. That was well said. It is so amazing to see those actors and what they were able to accomplish. But to remember and realize that people like Harvey Bullock, the writers, came up with those situations. That's the reason that I thought it was so special to have those interviews with Harvey and be able to let you hear them and see them if you watch the video versions. Because, wow, so many things like 92. Oh, it's hot. 92. You know who said that? Calvin Coolidge said that. Calvin Coolidge. That entire dialogue that Floyd delivered, Harvey wrote it. Man, and don't the trees seem nice and full? All right, so folks, we got even more. Do not go away. We've got even more coming up for you right now. Is our time for our This Week in Mayberry History.
Welcome to This Week in Mayberry History, a report by special correspondent Randy Turner of the Gomer and Cooper Pyle Comic Book Literary Guild of the Mayberry Historical Society.
Gene Hagen was born on August the 3rd, 1923. In the episode of The Andy Griffith Show titled Andy and the Woman Speeder, Gene played Elizabeth Crowley, a woman caught speeding through Mayberry who used bribery and flattery to convince all of Sheriff Taylor's witnesses into supporting her position. Gene's film debut was a supporting role in the 1949 film Adam's Rib, and her first starring role was in 1950's The Asphalt Jungle. But in film, Gene is unquestionably best remembered for playing the vain, talentless, and shallow silent film star Lena Lamont in the 1952 musical Singin' in the Rain, for which she received an Academy Award nomination. In 1953, Gene was cast in the new sitcom Make Room for Daddy. The show starred Danny Thomas as the successful nightclub entertainer Danny Williams, with Gene playing his wife Margaret. The show was produced by Sheldon Leonard, who would later also produce The Andy Griffith Show. Make Room for Daddy had high enough ratings to survive, but was never a top 30 show. Certainly one of the show's bright spots was that Gene was nominated for Emmy Awards for Best Supporting Actress in a Comedy Series every year for the first three seasons. Off camera, Danny and Gene often argued, which contributed to Gene feeling dissatisfied with the role. After the third season, she announced she would not be returning to the show. This obviously put star Danny and producer Sheldon in a difficult position. To explain that the characters had divorced would not have been accepted with the prevailing social norms of that time. Their solution was to kill off the character, a first in television sitcom history. When the fourth season began, the show had been retitled The Danny Thomas Show, and viewers learned that the character of Margaret Williams was dead. Throughout the fourth season, the storylines dealt with Danny Williams trying to be a single father, until it was decided that a new wife and mother was needed. So at the end of the season, Danny met a young widow nurse named Kathy. Danny and Kathy quickly fell in love, and in the season finale were engaged. at which point ABC promptly canceled the series. Instead of spelling the end of the series that had never fared well in the ratings, the cancellation proved fortuitous. That same year was the last for the top-rated I Love Lucy. When CBS learned the Danny Thomas show had been canceled, they picked it up and aired it in I Love Lucy's old time slot. By the end of the season, the show, which had never cracked the top 30, was ranked number 2 in the Nielsen ratings. Thankfully for Mayberry fans, the show had finally found success, since, as we know, a later episode of the show served as the pilot for the Andy Griffith Show. Sadly, Jean's health began to decline in the 1960s. She made a bit of a comeback in 1976 to play character roles in several television episodes and shows such as Starsky and Hutch. But she passed away in 1977 after battling esophageal cancer for 3 years. She was only 54. But Jean's work lives on. Her 3 best-remembered film roles were in Adam's Rib, The Asphalt Jungle, and Singin' in the Rain. All 3 have been placed in the National Film Registry for preservation as culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant films. She received a Hollywood Star on the Walk of Fame in 1960 for her contributions to television, in large part based on her performance as Margaret Williams in Make Room for Daddy. That's it for this week. As always, thanks for listening. And remember to take Andy's advice and go out there and act like somebody.
All right. Thank you, Randy. Thank you so much. Man, these are always amazing reports. And if you want to make sure you don't miss any of This Week in Mayberry History, his daily version, which is called Today in Mayberry History, you can go out and sign up for the email to make sure you get it notified. It's turnersgrade@gmail.com. And he will email you when he posts things at the Gomer and Goober Pyle Comic Book Literary Guild. So turnersgrade@gmail.com. Folks, I cannot thank you enough for being here. I'm always enjoy these things. I enjoy being able to tell you about things you may not have heard about. I would love to hear from you. You enjoy these kind of things where I'm giving you a little bit of history, giving you some extra stuff with Harvey. You can also let us know what you think about Randy's reports. Been getting glowing reports for Randy. Last week he evidently mispronounced Rob Petrie's name. And in the after show, I threw him under the bus because people were in the chat room were telling me, you didn't say the name right. I was saying, I didn't say it. But I appreciate Randy. Thanks for all he's been doing. Folks, I'd love to hear from you. Give me a call at 888-684-8415 or email me at floyd@imayberry.com. Drop by 2 Chairs No Waiting and click the contact button at the top of the page, and it's got all the information. We'll see you next time here on 2 Chairs.